Welcome to Voices from the Front Lines, segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming on the web for the world at www.kpfk.org. My name is Manuel Criollo, and I'm your host for today. So last Thursday, May 24th, over 1,500 people, predominantly Black, Latino, and Asian, attended the MTA's public hearing and vote on the fare increase. More than 300 people testified, the vast majority urging the board to reject any fare increase. Despite this historic outpouring of opposition from bus riders, community organizations, labor unions, and the clergy, the board majority voted 9-4 to significantly raise fares over the next 6 years, beginning in July of 2007. The Bus Riders Union, which has led the fight against the fare increase, has continued to organize and employ legal and political tactics to stop this environmental and civil rights violation. Joining us today to discuss today is Eric Mann, Director of the Labor Community Strategy Center and co-chair of the Bus Riders Union. And following our conversation with Eric and myself, we want to hear from you, the listeners. I mean, I really want to give props to the folks here on KPFK, the programming, the producers, for supporting this movement. So, but more importantly, also support you as a listener. And so we hope you will be calling in later in the show. So we will be right back with Eric Mann on MTA's fare increases and the BRU movement. Welcome back. You're listening to Voices from the Front Lines, and I'd like to welcome one of our co-hosts here at Voices from the Front Lines, Eric Mann, even though today we're going to try to switch the seats a little bit and do an interview as somebody both as an observer and obviously as an important participant in this struggle. So welcome to the show, Eric. So Eric, why don't you give, I mean, you know, I gave a breakdown of what happened last week, and as you know, from my point of view, it's definitely a very historical moment, both for the movement, but more importantly, you know, to take it more personal for myself, you know, as a person who was deeply involved in the struggle. And, you know, it was 2 months, 2.5 months of 24/7 of fare increases and the struggle against the MTA. And obviously it's been very impactful, and I don't think I ever will forget. It's one of those moments. I'm assuming that you had those moments. You've had those moments a lot in your lifetime. But for me, you know, obviously there's nothing pretty to describe what a big teaching moment and a beautiful moment for my own, like, optimism of the struggle.
Well, you know, I think we're living at a time when people, very few people really have any optimism, because there's very little grounds for optimism. So I think if you're not, you know, we keep saying the same thing. If you're not in an organization, things are hopeless. And if you're not in a good organization, things are hopeless. So we saw, all of us, something that exceeded our expectations and exceeded our own consciousness, which is great, because as an organizer, you wake up and we go to these meetings, as you know, Manuel. We have these Wednesday night planning committee meetings for the Bus Riders Union. We stay up till midnight at 1 o'clock trying to plan history. And rarely does history go the way you plan it, and rarely does it go better than you expected. On the other hand, something very terrible happened to bus riders. So let's start with, before we talk about how great the movement was, which it was, the punchline is we needed 5 votes to stop the MTA from raising fares. Mayor Villaraigosa introduced a compromise motion to increase fares by 5%. That's actually quite a bit. I mean, to start with, this compromise motion would still be 10% after 2 years, 20% after 4 years. So it was only a compromise motion because the MTA was absolutely determined to break the back of the bus riders union, the bus riders movement. And to go back to what I did in my book, Katrina's Legacy, talk about the second counter-revolution, this has to be understood as part of a counter-revolution against the revolution of the bus riders union. Because when we got involved in 1992, for a lot of our listeners and some of you I can remember, the bus system was on the verge of being destroyed. The MTA was taking virtually every cent it could from Prop A and Prop C tax money, that is the penny on a dollar that you pay, and using it to build first the Blue Line from Long Beach to Union Station, which is in many ways a good rail line, except that it cost about 5, 6, 7 times more than a great bus system could have done faster and better from Long Beach to Union Station. So the tradition was, build a rail line, originally was supposed to be $200 million, and then make it $400 million, $600 million, $800 million, and $1 billion. So if it's purposely told to the board that it's going to be $200 million, and then it ends up being $1 billion, where does the $800 million come from? It comes from rating the bus system. So the bus versus rail problem started from the first time they built a rail line and the first time they started rating funds. So by the time we get involved in 1992, 1993, the bus system is virtually destroyed. The buses have 500,000 miles to 1 million miles on them. A lot of them can't even get out of the depot because they go 2 miles and break down. So we take them to court, sue them under civil rights. In 1994, they try to get rid of the bus pass, which is almost what they're doing now. You know, you can either get rid of it or just charge so much that people can't afford it. The same thing. We take them to court with the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. We win, and we stop the fare increase. We stop getting rid of the monthly bus pass. We force them into a consent decree. We raise $2.7 billion in new money for the bus system. We get 2,500 new buses. We get rid of the diesel buses. It's a civil rights revolution happening right in the middle of a massive counter revolution that's been happening for 20 years. So one thing I've always felt is that we have to understand at the Bus Riders Union that we have been protected from growing fascism and protected from the right-wing counter-revolution by a little bit of a historical miracle. It's like right in the middle of a desert, we generate, you know, an oasis. But that oasis is protected by the federal courts, and it's a 10-year consent decree. And you can watch the MTA just counting from about the third and fourth year when they realize, oh, my God, we made a mistake with the bus riders union. We didn't know they were going to be so good at this and so relentless. It's almost like, when can we wait for the consent decree to be over so we can stop buying buses, go back to building more rail projects, raise the fare, and almost reverse the gains that we made? So the consent decree ended October of 2006, after 10 years. And as you know, Manuel, you went into the MTA, and Francisco Park just went into the MTA right after the consent decree was voted to be expired by federal judge Terry Hatter. And Gloria Molina said, well, don't worry. Listen, you know, we never liked those federal rules, but we want to do it on our own. We're not going to destroy the bus system. I mean, that's ridiculous. We have every plan to keep up a very, very high quality bus system. And would everybody on the board please turn around and assure the bus riders union that we have no intention to attack you. And would everybody please point a shotgun at the bus riders union, but certainly agree that you don't plan to pull the trigger. So 13 people smiled at us, pointed a shotgun in our face, and said, but no, we love you. So obviously, if you're a good organizer, you don't just go on people's words. So then there was the hope for Mayor Villaraigosa. And would he be as the new chair of the MTA, which was, you know, a year and a half ago when he got elected mayor, with his 4 votes, could he be an ally of the bus riders union? And the reality is he has not been. The reality is that he did spend the first year not raising fares. But there has been not a day that we went to the MTA where the mayor said to the bus riders union, hey, population's going up, the consent decree is almost coming to an end, why don't we order another 500 buses and expand the fleet? Why don't we have a bus-only lane project? He didn't do that. Instead, he's talking about widening the highways, widening the 405, and building an insane red line to the sea. So this is a little history, folks. You know, the mayor is really thinking about highways and thinking about railways. And the highway thing is unfortunately even to the right of where the MTA's dialogue has been for a while. But the mayor is really, really talking about, in my opinion, giving up on any fight against global warming and, in fact, exacerbating global warming in the auto capital of the world. So then here we come. Next for us. So we don't have Gloria Molina on the board majority. We don't have the mayor, which we hope to have. And then we have the bus riders union. Now, folks, don't tell anybody, but we're a relatively small organization. They know that. We have, you know, a small staff. We have, we're very lucky. We have several hundred incredibly active members. We think we have sometimes 50,000, sometimes 100,000 bus riders on the bus who support us. But our members are Black, Latino, and Asian Pacific Islander, mainly Korean. They're very low income. They're disabled. They're elderly. And at this point in history, the system is attacking them right and left. They go out and march. We go out and march on May Day. They shoot us and beat us up. They attack people's immigration rights. So, you know, as we were saying the other night, during the Civil Rights Movement, there was this revolution of rising expectations. If Lyndon Johnson says we shall overcome, if the Kennedys say that this is a moral obligation to end segregation, the federal courts rule in Brown versus Board of Education, people have a certain sense of, hey, the system is really encouraging me to fight. And then the revolutionaries can come in and say the system isn't fighting hard enough, you got to take on the system, we can get more. But this is very, very different when the system is saying to you, I plan to give you nothing. I plan to crush you, crush your spirit, crush your bus. And I, Gloria Molina, I'm in a 2 million person district. I don't know if the listeners know. There's 10 million people in L.A. County. It's divided up among five county supervisors, the most undemocratic districts probably in the United States. It's 10 times more than a congressman's district. You can't get rid of Zeb Yaroslavsky or Yvonne Burke or Gloria Molina. They have enormous war chests. And it's almost like trying to organize to try to change the position of five kings and queens. They think that they're in for life, which they are. And that now, the other thing is this is not just transit racism, but this is fundamentally the corporate control of government, as a lot of us know, in which basically our tax money is given to government, who in turn subsidizes the capitalist class, who claims they want to take risks, claims they get rich by taking risks, but the first thing you're not going to know about a capitalist is they don't want to take any risks. That's why they steal, that's why they cheat, and that's why they get government contracts. So all these rail projects are boondoggles for developers. They pay off a lot of your campaign contributors, and they do nothing for the people. So how in the world are we going to get five votes to stop this if nobody has the class interest of the bus riders union at heart, and the bus riders themselves are oppressed and being attacked? So in the middle of this, this is where the hopeful thing comes in, that first we had the campaign to say that you sort of divide one into two. The mayor is not our ally, but the mayor we thought is a more vulnerable in the good sense because he has some ethics, vulnerable because he does want to argue that he represents the interests of the Black and Latino poor, vulnerable because we think there's an edge of conscience, and also vulnerable because we plan to take him to court and sue him. And that's which we'll get to. So the thing for us, and Manuel, you know, you talked about this in the last fare increase in 2004, was we turned out 150, 200 people there, but large numbers of people did not come out. You know, besides what the bus riders union, you know, begged, borrowed, and stole, and begged people to come and got our strongest members to come. So now we show up. Now we'll go backwards on, you know, you'll tell the story of how it happened. We get there the day of the vote, and there's 1,500 people there. We get there, and we expected 400 to 500. We told the MTA they needed an overflow room. They needed translators. But we had no clue that there were going to be this many people. 1,500 people show up. 400 people sign up to testify. 350 people testify. And they say, please don't do this to me. Here's my son who I'm holding in my hand. I have $20 at the end of the month. Do you really need my $20? I don't have enough money to feed my kid. I don't have enough money for medical. And Gloria Molina just cavalierly says, thank you so much. Next speaker, next speaker, next speaker, next speaker. Everybody has the right to speak to the queen and to the king. Half the time they didn't listen. Half the time they're talking to each other. They were being moderately polite, you know, probably doing their taxes on the dais while we're talking. They're not listening, and they're not impacted. The mayor was somewhat impacted. So then the vote comes down. After 350 people testify, there comes Gloria Molina, and she's got it already. Day past $3, next time $5, next time $6, next time $7.25. Who's going to pay $7.25 a day? Who's going to go from $3 to $5? Monthly pass, $52, $62, $75, $90. Weekly pass, $14, $17, $20, $24. As you know, Manuel, what was really shocking is after we did all this talk, the mayor introduced a motion for his 5% fare increase. He only had 5 votes, and then one of the votes was a name from Bonnie Lowenthal from Long Beach. She was never really a vote. She was just trying to do it to make the mayor happy. She was all along with Gloria. And then the 9 of them vote this thing. So I'll sort of end with this, that as the first part of the commentary. One is that it's very rare when there is a mass character to a struggle. The difficult thing now is a lot of people rose up and fought, but they're not in a permanent organization. So the first challenge to the strategy center bus riders unions, how do we find those people, keep the pressure on, and give people an organizational experience? Two, now the fare increases are going to go into effect on July 1st. It is going to cause irreparable harm. It is going to cause environmental damage because people are going to buy cars. Now, here's 2 positive things, and then we'll discuss, you know, I'll kick it around. I was just called by somebody at KCET, and she was saying, well, is it correct to say that the bus riders union is threatening legal action? I said, no. The bus riders union is taking legal action. We're not threatening anything. Mm-hmm. On June 18th, represented by Howry LLP, a very big international law firm, the Strategy Center Bus Riders Union is going to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to appeal the overturning of the consent decree and to say to the federal courts, we don't agree with the district court decision, and look what the MTA has done in just the 6 months after the consent decree is over. They're wreaking havoc. Secondly, represented by the Natural Resources Defense Council, we're going to be going to state court and bringing action based on the California Environmental Quality Act on the grounds that this environmental disaster requires at least an environmental impact report, which will take at least a year, and hopefully to enjoin the MTA from raising the fares. And finally, as Manuel and I talked about, if you are listening to the show today, and if the increase in the bus fare from $52 to $62, and if you have other members of your family, if that increase will either cause significant suffering, not an inconvenience, but significant suffering to you and your family, or if that fare increase will get you to seriously consider buying a car as part of your overall transportation options, or if you have a car, to use it more, we need you to sign what's called a declaration to say that I'm willing to go to the court and say, if the MTA's fare increase goes into effect on July 1st, it will hurt my family and I will be forced to use less public transportation, doesn't mean none, and I'll be forced to use more automobiles or buy an automobile. If either of those 2 fit you and you're really ready to come into our office and sit down and write out what's called a declaration, call 213-387-2800. We're going to talk about that throughout the show. And finally, I'll just segue back to you, Manuel, that, you know, this isn't an infomercial, but the work that you did as the campaign manager, basically, and the work that Francisco Porch just did and Damon Azzali as the lead organizers, the work that Barbara Lott Holland did as the co-chair of the Bus Riders Union to drive the operation, I think that is a lot of hope, and we are very lucky. We have a movement on our hands. Now the question is, what are we going to do about it?
We're talking to Eric Mann, Executive Director of Labor Community Strategy Center and co-chair of the Bus Riders Union. Yeah, I think that's the hardest question, Eric. Not so much because where do we go from here? It seems, you know, logical about, you know, at least we have at least some very important cards to play out. And obviously the main task for us right now is how do we take many of those people who, you know, out of their spontaneity, join the movement. Now, how do we make it that into a permanent and a permanent outrage in some ways? And I guess the difficult aspect in my own view is that I think the hardest thing that we're facing, and I've been very clear with this since joining the movement in some ways, but that the counter revolution that, you know, you've described in a lot of ways, particularly in Katrina's legacy, but, you know, the counter revolution, at least in my own eyes, that I've seen of, you know, a backtracking on the concept of institutional racism, a backtracking of any sort of level of decency from elected officials, you know, makes folks, you know, I cannot blame somebody on the bus when they lose complete hope when we were there and we saw how, God, you know, in my view, you know, maybe I had over expectations of what I thought about Gloria Molina having somebody say, Gloria, I only have $5 at the end of the week, at the end of the month, what am I supposed to do? And as you were saying, next, you know, like, or more extreme versions, my husband is got cancer or some major disease, and just next. And I guess I'm very hopeful of the actors on our side. It seems the hard aspect to really ingest is the vacillating, but it's not even vacillating. It's the forces for the counter-revolution that include many times people who, when we probably looked at the original game plan, were part of that. We're not part, but at least were forces that we think could be, you know, could be switched or could be pressured or could be moved in some ways.
Well, you know, one of the things when we talked about during the 1960s and we used Mao's United Front, the theory was that the middle class of color, the professional classes, in some way, even what was very loosely called the black bourgeoisie, which was usually really talking about a black petty bourgeoisie or middle class, the reason we thought they were vacillating allies is because we thought they were caught in the middle. They were caught in the middle between their desire to be part of capitalism and capitalism's desire to not let them. And they would both get certain things from the capitalist class, and yet, in return, they would get certain humiliations. They would get beat up by the police sometimes. So they would have very, very bad experiences. Well, for a lot of oppressed nationality members of what I think is the ruling class right now, they're not vacillating. They're not having bad experiences. They are being brought into an integration of imperialism that is peeling off a top layer of the oppressed nationality people to be at least the comprador bourgeoisie, and possibly part of the imperialist bourgeoisie itself. The LA Times, the New York Times, had a 4-page business section on diversity. And it basically said you cannot do business, this is all by business, in Africa, Asia, and Latin America if you don't hire blacks, Latinos, and Asian Pacific Islanders to advance the interest of U.S. imperialism in the third world. Hmm. And we need to, and those of you who still are racist, in the sense of racist at the highest level of your hiring policies, not changing the racism of oppressing whole nations and peoples, you are making a big mistake. And U.S. capitalism is going to lose in the third world to Indians, to Chinese, to Hugo Chavez, if we don't change the face of white folks. So there's a very big difference between whether a minister who gets a government contract, you know, and even there we could ask, will he vacillate? Now, a lot of them don't, right? Mm-hmm. But certainly Gloria Molina, who now owns certain means of production that controls the state, I think we made a misassessment that, you know, it wasn't a misassessment. I'll take that back. Our assessment is, look, you can have all this analysis you want, and our assessment is that Yvonne Brathwaite-Burke and Gloria Molina would not side with us. But after all this theory, our plan has got to be to try to force them, to try to find whatever contradiction. And what we found, which isn't surprising, is we can't find those contradictions. And to me, it certainly means that I do think that some of those forces have become part of the ruling class. They're not just agents of the ruling class, they're part of the ruling class. And I think we need a whole new generation of black and Latino professionals, dentists, doctors, lawyers, artists, to side with the working class who are not part of the imperialist bourgeoisie, and who, you know, and I think that's And of course, we need the leadership of the working class of color, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the question is, so here's my big dilemma. Richard Katz said to us, Richard Katz is, the listeners, is a member of the board of the MTA, who did side with us on this vote, and who was pretty courageous, along with Peter Gosar, in trying to stop at least some of the rail juggernaut. He said, what if there becomes a permanent 9-person hardline board that's just going to vote every single time for rail, do nothing for buses, and kill the bus system? I think the question to you as an organizer is, what if there is not an electoral strategy in the next 20 years? What if it's going to be harder and harder and harder to pressure these people to win reforms? In China, they answered this by saying, do you want to join a revolutionary movement? And people went out into the countryside and carried out guerrilla warfare. They didn't think they were winning any reforms. They just thought they were going to try to overthrow imperialism. Or they didn't win any reforms from the white settler states in Kenya, but they formed the Mau Mau movement. I think the question for us is, can we get large numbers of working people to accept, what if it's a 5 or 10 year period where we don't elect anybody, don't win a whole lot of reform, go to government agencies and they keep locking up our people? Can we find things for them to do that are not just keeping them busy? And what is our tactical plan in the age of reaction? That's what I think, you know, this raises to me.
And, I mean, obviously, I want to really engage you with that question. People are listening to Voices from the Front Lines on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. Eric, I think we're going to take a break and
Sounds good. Come
back with this, but we'll continue back with our conversation with Eric Mann on MTA's decision to increase fares and the fight to stop it and the movement that is growing. And after, you know, we have a conversation with Eric, we want to hear from you, the listeners, at 818-985-5735, 985-5735, KPFK. So, folks, we'll hear from you soon.